This course is one in a series of courses offered by Career Physician to provide you with valuable knowledge and skills that will give you an edge as you begin your professional career as a physician. One of the things you're probably looking forward to as you complete your medical training is a decent paycheck. It's easy to think that your money worries will be over and that you'll always have enough to do everything you want to do. Nothing could be further from the truth. Proper financial planning, starting at the very early stages of your medical career, can make the difference between a secure financial future or the prospect of facing retirement without adequate The purpose of this course is to introduce you to the broad field of financial planning and to encourage you to get an early start. By the end of this course, you should have a better understanding of how money works, how to analyze your own financial situation, how to set your financial goals, the importance of saving and investing, and the issues involved in selecting various types of life insurance. We'll also cover strategies for handling debt reduction and planning for disability and retirement. As a new physician, you'll be very busy with establishing and building a practice, and if you're not careful, the time can slip away quickly, and, along with it, the opportunity to achieve financial security. There's an old adage, often quoted by financial advisors. No one ever plans to fail. Unfortunately, they just fail to plan. Make a commitment today to start your financial plan and stick to it. So, what does your financial report card look like today? Answer the following questions honestly, and let's see where you stand. Do you have a written financial plan for this year? Have you shared the important details of your plan with your significant other? Do you really know the details of your basic monthly budget, your income, and your expenses? Do you actually live within your means? Do you regularly save at least 10% of your annual gross income? Do you have a plan to meet the cost of foreseeable expenses? Right now, do you have enough money set aside for emergencies? Do you retain complete records for tax purposes, including income, expenses, and receipts, in an organized manner? Do you keep a list of your credit card numbers and other important documents in a safe place? Are you taking advantage of all opportunities to minimize your taxes? Do you know when you plan to retire and how much money you'll need? And if you were to become disabled, do you know how much money you need? So, how did you do? If you're like most people, not too well. New physicians often think they need every penny just to meet daily expenses. There's nothing left over to save. And retirement? It just seems too remote to even worry about at this stage. Then there's plain old procrastination. Yes, I know I need to have a financial plan. I'm really going to do it one of these days. Here's an example provided by Michael Goodman of the Tulane University School of Medicine. Notice what happens when you postpone saving for retirement. If you were to start saving $165 a month at age 25, by the time you were 65, you would have contributed $79,200. But the account could be worth $579,856 due to the magic of compounding interest. If you waited 10 years and then began saving $165 a month at age 35, you would have contributed $59,400, but the account could be worth $247,549. The same amount saved beginning at age 45 would mean that your actual contribution of $39,600 could be worth only $97,836. Finally, if you waited until age 55 to begin saving, your $165 a month could be worth a mere $30,387. Now, in all these examples, we're assuming that you're making monthly contributions to a tax-deferred retirement investment and that you're receiving an 8% rate of return compounded monthly. Actual results will vary. You could fare better or worse depending on the rate of interest. Remember, too, that income taxes will be due when you begin to withdraw money from your tax-deferred investment plan. But you get the idea. Starting early and sticking to a savings plan can make a huge difference when you reach retirement age. The first step to take in reaching your financial goals is to know what those goals are. This may seem like a no-brainer, but if you ask around, you'll find that very few of your colleagues and friends will be able to give you a clear, concise, and concrete description of their financial goals. Take the time now to ask yourself what's important about money to you. The answer is different for everyone. And you can be sure that the way you answer that question is likely to change over time as you progress in your medical career. So, exactly what is important to you about money? Lots of things, no doubt. The trick here is to put it in writing. Just thinking or talking about it is not enough. Your goals become much more real when you put them to paper, and much less easier to ignore. Start with a simple brainstorming session. Think of all the things you want and write them down on a piece of paper. You might want to buy a house or a bigger house. A luxury car, pay off your student loans. Maybe you want to travel. If you're a parent, there's your children's education to consider. You might need to care for aging parents. Or maybe your goals are different. You might want to gain the respect of your friends and family or your community. Perhaps you want to leave a legacy or fund a social program or charity. You also need to consider your retirement. How long do you want to work? How much money will you need to live on when you retire? And what would happen if you become disabled? How much money will your family need? Once you've identified your financial goals, you need to do the math to assign a dollar figure to each of them. You also need to set priorities. At the end of the day, saving for your children's college education may have a higher priority than the fancy Porsche. It's also a good idea to categorize your goals along a timeline. You may have immediate goals, like the establishment of an emergency cash fund, short-term goals for purchases and expenses in the next 5 years, mid-term goals that are 5 to 10 years down the road, and long-term goals that are more than 10 years in the future. It's different for everyone. What's essential is that you decide what's important to you and get into writing it now. The first step to meeting your goals is to save your money. Don't spend it all. It can be very tempting if you're tired of pinching pennies throughout your medical training to go wild when you start making a decent living. Resist the temptation and establish a regular savings program right from the start of your career. The earlier, the better. Financial experts will tell you that 95% of people spend money first and save whatever's left over. That means that only 5% save money first and spend what's left over. Which way do you think works best? Yes, join the smart 5% and set up a savings program now. How much should you save? As much as you can, the experts say. One scenario that will work for a lot of new physicians is to allocate 10% to long-term savings, 20% to debt reduction, and 70% to living expenses. Be sure to pay off your highest interest rates first. At different times in your career, your income is likely to take a jump up. This is when discipline becomes really important, and sticking to your plan can mean the difference between financial security and unforeseen problems down the road. Experts recommend that whenever your income increases, take that extra money and divide it into thirds. One third is your reward, just go ahead and spend it. One third should go into debt reduction and/or savings. The other one third will go to cover your increased taxes. Of course, the equal thirds allocation of new income isn't right for everyone. Each individual situation is different depending on the size of your debt, whether you have dependents, your spouse's financial contribution, the level of your income, etc. One of the keys to financial security and peace of mind is to become debt-free. Most new physicians leave medical school with a sizable school loan debt. What's the best way to pay down this debt? Follow your financial plan. It may take a little bit of discipline and a little bit of denial, but the feeling you'll get when that loan has been paid off earlier than you expected is worth it. Here's an example. As a new physician just coming out of residency and going into practice, you might see your income jump from $35,000 to $140,000. Quite a jump up and quite a temptation to run out and buy everything you think you've been denied during those long years in medical school. Stop and think before you spend. Stick to your plan and take a longer view of financial success. Let's use the equal thirds plan we just mentioned. The percentages you use may be different depending on your circumstances, but the idea is the same. Your income has just increased by $105,000 a year. Each of the equal thirds of that amount is $35,000. Spend a third. You can add $35,000 to your living expenses. In residency, you might have had only $20,000 after taxes, and now you can spend an additional $35,000. You've more than doubled what you can spend on daily expenses. Be happy. Pay down your debt. Use one-third to pay down your debt. That's $35,000 a year in debt reduction. If, for example, you came out of medical school with $150,000 in debt, you could be debt-free in just 4 years. Taxes. The increase in your income is going to mean a corresponding increase in your taxes. That's where the other one-third will go. You'll actually have the money to pay the taxes. If you're a parent or plan to be a parent, you're probably already thinking about the cost of educating your children. The cost of a college education is one of the biggest bills you'll ever face, so it's important to start a savings plan early. For example, if you start putting aside $100 a month when your child is born, compounded at 8% annually, you'll have nearly $50,000 by the time she reaches 18. If you wait until she's 13 to start, you'll only have accumulated $7,000. Again, everyone's circumstances are different. A good plan will take into account how much you can comfortably contribute, how much time you have to meet your goal, and the level of risk you're willing to take with your investments. An investment with a high return potential is likely to have a higher level of risk. Now that you're convinced of the importance of saving a certain percentage of your income on a regular basis, the next question is how to invest that money. The idea here is to get your money to work for you instead of you working for the money. Financial security means that you have an independent income from investment sources that you can use to meet your goals. When you retire or if you become disabled, you're still going to need an income, and good investments will assure that you do. However, you must understand that every investment comes with a risk. The idea is not to avoid risk altogether, but to manage it in a way that works best for you. Since this is different for every individual, you should consider getting expert advice. Remember, too, that your risk tolerance will change during the course of your life. As a young physician just starting out, you have the time to take higher risks with your investments. As you approach retirement, however, your main concern will be the preservation of what you accumulated, and you will likely be uncomfortable with high-risk investments. The trick is to develop a plan that works for you, then revisit and adjust it annually with the help of a professional. Here's an example of different ways to invest. Let's assume that you have $100,000 to invest over a 10-year period. Maybe you're comfortable with a higher level of risk at this early stage of your career, and you pick a stock that has been doing extremely well for the past couple of years. Here's a typical return of a higher risk investment over the course of 10 years. Now, let's see what happens if we invest the same $100,000 in a conservative, lower risk fund that will always return 8%. Which do you think will produce the highest return at the end of 10 years? If you pick the high risk model, you'll be surprised. Scenario 1 will produce $215,571, and Scenario 2 will produce $215,892. Most financial experts will tell you that consistent long-term conservative investments will produce the same, if not better, results with far less risk. The other golden key to investment success is to start early. Let's take a look at another example. Say you start immediately saving $5,000 a year and stick to it for the next 10 years. And that's it. You never save another thing. Assuming a reasonable conservative annual return of 7%, along with the magic of compounding interest, at the end of 40 years, you'll have $562,684. Or, say you wait 10 years before you start putting the $5,000 a year into savings because you want to spend the money on a nice Mercedes, vacations, a bigger house, whatever it is. The reality is that you'll never catch up. Even if you keep putting away $5,000 a year for the next 30 years, you'll end up with $505,365. So, start now to save as much as you can, even if it seems small. Small amounts of money can grow dramatically over long periods of time. There's an inverse ratio between risk and expected return. In other words, the safer the investment, the lower annual percentage of growth. While it's possible to make a lot of money with a high-risk investment, you're equally likely to lose everything. Between the two extremes, there's a lot of middle ground. Finding the spot that's right for you is an individual decision based on your goals and level of risk tolerance. Here are the major types of investments available. Cash assets. This includes savings accounts and money market accounts, liquid funds that you can get to easily and quickly. The interest rates may not be that high, but they're guaranteed. You can't lose the money investing this way. Cash assets are the best choice for short-term investing, under 3 years. It's a good idea to keep an emergency fund equal to 6 months' living expenses as cash assets. Bonds. When you buy bonds, you're really lending money to the state or federal government, to a city or corporation. Bonds pay a fixed amount of interest at regular intervals, so they're considered very safe, especially in the 3 to 10 year investment range. While bonds typically pay more than simple cash assets, they'll not provide the high return of a hot stock in a very good year. Because of their low risk and regular income, however, bonds are popular with retirees and those approaching retirement. Remember that bonds are not entirely risk-free. If for some reason you need to sell your bonds before their maturity date, you could lose money. You should also be aware that bond prices fluctuate inversely to changes in interest rates. In other words, when interest rates rise, older bonds purchased at lower rates will lose value. Stocks. If you're looking for long-term growth, 5 years out or more, and capital appreciation, investing in stocks may be right for you. Generally speaking, older established companies and utilities will provide stable growth and high dividends. Mutual funds. Mutual funds are stock packages put together and managed by professionals. There are literally thousands to choose from and a wide range of quality. Be careful to look at the fund's objectives, the fees and charges, the manager's qualification and experience, and the current makeup of the fund's portfolio. You can get this information from the fund's portfolio or from Morningstar, a mutual funds analysis company. Look for their information in the library or online at www.morningstar.com. Unit Investment Trusts, UIT. A UIT is a trust that consists of a fixed portfolio of securities designed to meet a certain investment objective, such as growth or income. The trust is offered to investors in unit increments, and investors receive a share of the earned income and their pro rata share of the holdings when the trust reaches maturity. Unlike a mutual fund, a UIT is created for a specific time duration and with a fixed set of securities. Nothing is bought or sold under typical circumstances. This provides investors with capital gains and advantages over mutual funds. Finally, be sure to diversify your investments. Remember the old saying, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Financial experts will all tell you that you should have some of your money in cash, some in bonds, some in higher-risk stocks, some in lower-risk stocks. The percentage you put into each type depends on where you are in your career, the amount of money you have to invest, the financial goals you've set for yourself, and the level of risk that's appropriate for you. This is called asset allocation, and your financial advisor can help you determine the percentage of your portfolio that should be invested in different types of securities to provide you with the highest rate of return for any given level of risk. As you proceed through your career and your level of risk tolerance changes, you should review and adjust your asset allocation. The next piece to consider in fashioning your overall financial plan is life insurance. Why do you need life insurance? The most obvious reason is to provide financially for your dependents if you die, but there are several other reasons to consider. Some types of insurance offer cash value accumulations that can be used as savings. If you're young and in good health, you can afford it now. Premiums will be higher the longer you wait. Guaranteed insurability provisions permit you to buy more insurance later, regardless of changes in your health or circumstances. And cash value accumulation is tax-deferred and death proceeds are tax-free. What's the right type of life insurance to buy? Again, everyone's circumstances are unique, so it's a good idea to enlist the help of a financial planner to decide what's most appropriate for you. Here's a brief description of the most common types of life insurance. Term. Term insurance is simple and straightforward. It pays your beneficiaries a specific sum of money at your death, but does not build up a cash value. If you don't pay the premium, the policy will lapse. Typically, term insurance is very cheap if you're young and healthy, but the premium will increase as you get older or develop health problems. Whole life. A whole life policy will provide your beneficiaries with a death benefit plus a cash buildup. The policy has a guaranteed cash value and level premiums are guaranteed over your lifetime. Universal life. This type of insurance policy will give you a death benefit, cash buildup, and flexible premiums over your lifetime. The cash value portion of the policy is invested in a low-risk interest-bearing account. Universal life is designed for flexibility. Both the amount of coverage and the premium can be increased or decreased. Variable universal life. This type of policy is similar to universal life, except that the cash portion is invested in higher-risk stocks, bond, or mutual fund. How much life insurance do you need? Well, it depends on why you're buying it. One rule of thumb offered by experts is that you'll need $100,000 of coverage for every $500 a month of income your beneficiaries require. Here's an example. You decide that family needs $5,000 a month to live on if you die. Take that amount, $5,000, and divide it by 500. The result is 10. Then multiply $100,000 by 10. The answer is that you will probably need $1 million in life insurance. If you have large debts to pay off, such as mortgages and student loans, you may need even higher coverage. As you're just beginning your medical career, the prospect of becoming disabled is pretty far from your mind. However, it can and does happen, and you should take steps now to plan for it. The first step is to establish an emergency fund that will keep your family afloat for at least 4 months. Whatever your combined monthly household income is, multiply that by at least 4 and start saving as much as you can in liquid cash assets, a savings account or money market account. Financial experts agree that you should do this first before you start your long-term savings and investments program. Disability insurance is also an option, but you should seek professional advice because finding the right coverage for you can be complicated. When you're just beginning your medical career, it's hard to even imagine retirement. However, every doctor approaching retirement will tell you they can't believe how fast the time went by. The bottom line is that when you retire, your paychecks will stop, but your need for an income will not. So you have to start planning now to create that retirement income from sources other than your employment as a physician. First of all, decide how long you want to work. Perhaps you're one of those people who want to retire early, at 50 or 55, and live the good life. Or maybe you're happiest when you're working and don't plan to retire until 65 or 70 or later. It's different for every individual, and your feelings about when to retire are also likely to change one way or the other during your career. Next, take a look at the life expectancy tables and estimate how long you're likely to live. It's a good idea to be conservative here. You don't want to outlive your income. Even though the average life expectancy is in the 70s and 80s, many professionals use age 90 in their calculation. How much annual income will you need when you retire? Surprisingly, most experts will tell you that your spending level will probably stay about the same after you retire. You may no longer have to spend money on your mortgage or commute costs or your children's education, but your travel and healthcare costs will likely rise. Don't depend on big tax breaks when you retire either. Most retired physicians find that they're paying about the same in taxes now as they were before they retired. However, when you retire, you can stop saving money and start living off the income it generates. So, if you've been saving all along at a rate of 30%, you should be able to live comfortably at 70% of your pre-retirement income. Here are a couple of examples. Suppose you decide that you want to have a pre-tax retirement income of $100,000 a year. To make that happen, you need to have an accumulated $1,700,000 in savings when you retire. Remember that your risk tolerance after you retire will be low, so this calculation assumes that your $1,700,000 post-retirement nest egg will be invested in safe government or treasury bonds that consistently pay about 6%. Or perhaps you're already 45 years old and have about $300,000 in savings. You've decided that you want to work for another 20 years, until you're 65, and you want to have a post-retirement income of $12,000 a month. You're going to have to put aside $490 a month into an investment that pays 12% annually. At the end of 20 years, you'll have saved a total of $3,400,000, which is enough to provide you with an annual post-retirement income of $144,000 in pre-tax dollars. The key to successful retirement planning is to maximize the growth of your retirement savings. Keep this in mind as your income increases throughout your career. Start early. Whenever your income increases, the first thing to do is to consider increasing the percentage you are putting into savings. Be sure to establish and stick to a budget. You'll develop a much clearer idea of how much money you'll need to retire on. You'll also have a better idea of where your money is going, what you're spending it on, and where you might consider changing your spending habits to fund your retirement savings. And don't forget to review your financial plan on a regular basis, at least once a year, to see how you're doing. Your retirement goals, your income, and your risk tolerance will change over the course of your career, and the earlier you adjust for these changes, the better chance you have at becoming financially secure. So, what's your current financial diagnosis? If your expenses exceed your income, you're in critical condition. If your income covers your basic needs, but there's absolutely nothing left over, we can upgrade your condition to guarded. If you actually have something left over after you've covered your basic needs, you're in stable condition. The aim of financial planning is to improve your financial health much further until you can say with confidence that you're in excellent financial health, you're financially secure, and approaching independence. The most difficult part of creating a financial plan is to start. Procrastination is your biggest enemy. Make a commitment to start a financial plan today. What's the best way to start? You may be one of those people who like to do everything on their own, but good financial planning is complex and time-consuming. If you're like most busy people, you'll probably be better off enlisting the help of professional financial planners, including a chartered financial consultant and certified financial planner. It's a good idea to meet with a number of different consultants and be certain that you're comfortable with that person's style, financial philosophy, and personality. Financial planning is a lifelong endeavor. Find advisors you feel you can work with over the years. What should you expect from your financial advisor? Well, quite a bit. Unbiased advice. Money matters can bring out strong emotions. Couples may find that they have very different feelings when it comes to money. An advisor can help by providing the reality check. Define your goals. A planner can help you identify your goals, assign priorities, and point out conflicts. For example, a planner may be able to convince you that it may be more important to start an emergency fund than to buy a new luxury car. Plan your investments. A good financial planner will help assure that your money is invested in the most appropriate manner. For example, your long-term retirement funds shouldn't be invested in the same way as your emergency cash fund or your short-term vacation money. He or she will also understand the principles behind asset allocation and guide you in how and where to invest. Analyze your spending. Your financial planner can take a good look at the way you're spending your money and make suggestions that will help you realize your financial goals. If you're making a good salary, you may be tempted to overspend for a big house or luxury cars. Your planner will help you look at the big picture and make decisions that will keep you financially secure over the long term. Insurance needs. Different types of insurance policies are better for different situations. Your planner can help you decide which is best for your particular needs and circumstances. Keep you on track. The major advantage of developing a long-term relationship with your financial advisor is that he or she will keep you on track. A good planner will meet with you to go over your portfolio at least once a year, more often if there are changes in your circumstance. So now, it's up to you. Nothing will happen unless you make the decision now to set up and follow a financial plan. Remember what the experts say. No one plans to fail. They just fail to plan.